Doppler.
All right.
Blog Talk Radio.
This is Monica Liel welcoming you to the LL Research radio program In the Now with Carla L. Ruckert and Jim McCarty. Today is Friday, January 11th, 2013. Carla L. Ruckert is an author, mystic, seeker, and primary channel for LL Research. Jim McCarty is Carla's husband, the scribe for the Ra Contact, and president of LL Research. Please visit our websites, llresearch.org, home to over 1,500 channeling transcripts, 11 publications, the Law of One material, interviews, speeches, and more. And the community website, bringforth.org, that's bring, the number 4, th.org, featuring forums, blogs, chat rooms, and more. I will be asking Carla and Jim questions that come from you. If you'd like to ask a question live on the air, please call 646-595-2294 and press the 1 key when prompted. Again, that number is 646-595-2294. Or you can join the chat room at blogtalkradio.com/LLResearch. When submitting questions, please remember this is a Law of One Q&A. Try to keep your questions as spiritually oriented as possible. Again, I'm Monica Liel, and I'm talking with Carla L. Ruckert and Jim McCarty of LL Research. Hey, Carla and Jim, are you with us?
We're here.
Okay. Are you all better, both of you? You over the flu bug you had?
Jim's a little bit better from the flu, which means that he's sort of on a par with me. We're both sort of coughing and hacking and wishing that we felt better, and poor Gary, our admin, is in the same boat. He wasn't early enough at the immediate care center to get Tammy flu, and so he's got to go through the whole thing. And it's sort of like a house of death, you know. The house is ill. But, you know, we're fine. Spiritually speaking, we're good, and I'm sure that talking to you next week, we will be able to say we're a lot better.
Are you guys having a contest to see who can get the sickest? And
I think so, and I'm not sure who's winning. It was dead heat, definitely. How are you? You're better than that.
Yeah, doing fine.
It was on the national news, Monica. Did you notice that?
No, what was?
It was on the national news that the flu.
Everybody
is getting the creeping crud. I was amazed, but apparently it's a real pandemic. It's a lot worse than it's been in years past.
Gosh, well, I'm sorry to hear that. I sure hope you feel better.
You say you're doing better, though.
Yeah, we don't usually get that stuff, knock on wood. So, but we're doing all right around here. Well, we actually have a live caller, but I'm going to let this person know that we will get to you. Well, they're gone. Well, we did have a live caller. Okay, well, if you want to call back, whoever that was, we're going to do the opening riff, and after Carla talks about that a few minutes, then feel free to call back if you'd like, and we'll let you in on the call. So, all right, then, unless you had any announcements or anything, I'll go ahead and go to the riff.
That's fine.
Okay.
Oh, I do have an announcement. Tomorrow, I am going to be on a show with Winfrey on the radio, and we're going to be talking about the Law of One. Win is irrepressibly humorous and has studied the Law of One for many years and studied the whole field for a long time. Pretty wise guy. And he's fun to talk to, and he's I think it's going to be a really good conversation. It's going to be for 3 hours, And if you'd like to attend, all you have to do is, you know, look at my Facebook page or look at my blog. I put the link up there. Let's see if I can get the link real quick.
The blog at the Brinkhurst.
My Camelot Journal blog, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Let me get the link up here. It's in one of Wynn's.
Did you say 3 hours?
Yeah. How about that?
Wow.
Here we go. Okay. Just, Well, I don't know what to tell you.
Well,
this is awful.
The link is
on the Camelot Journal blog. The link is on my Facebook page. It's been advertised, actually, through that Star Dove Intelligent Infinity site, because they like our material enough to think that it might be pretty good. But I'm not seeing an actual link, unless there's a link up here. No.
Well, I could be looking for it during the show, and then by the
end of
the show,
that'll be great if you can find it.
We'll find it.
Uh-huh.
Okay, you posted it on your blog, the Camelot Journal.
Here we go. Finally, if you type in the whole thing underlined, Carla hyphen, not an underline hyphen, but a hyphen, capital C A R L A hyphen capital W Y N N hyphen space. Law, capital L-A-W, space, O-F, space, capital O-1-E-N-E, space, and then workshop, capital W, workshop. That's one that'll get it. The other
I
one,
hate to tell you this, but you lost me, and you may
I'll
have
do the
lost.
Other one. It's easier.
Okay.
The other one is all lowercase except for what I tell you. HTTP, /// www, naturally, getresponse.com/archive/intelligentinfinity/. Then the first letter of the raw materials is all capitalized, the-raw-material-for-dummies with the capital D, hyphen, like with a capital L, hyphen, us with a capital U, another hyphen, and then these numbers: 103097.html. That will get it also.
Okay, could you repeat those numbers?
It's 103097.html.
Okay. GetResponse.com/archive/intelligentinfinity altogether, /capital T for the-raw capitalized-material-for-dummies-life-us.
Dummies like us. LIKE.
Oh, okay. Like,
and
dummies like us.
Yeah.
Okay. Dummies, okay, like, L-I-K-E slash, I mean, hyphen, U-S, hyphen, 103097.html.
Okay,
let's
no
see
dash,
what we
the dot.
It worked. Got it.
Okay, just a
okay.
dot for the HTML. Okay, beautiful.
Great.
Thank you so much. I'm sorry to make such a big thing
okay.
of it, but it will be 3 hours in it.
And oh, what a beautiful site here. Wow.
It'll be an effort.
Yeah.
So
okay, I'm gonna read this back one more time, okay, if people
yeah.
get it. Okay, getresponse.com/archive/intelligentinfinity/the-raw-material-for www.dummies-like, LIKE-US-103-09-791.html. And that works, and I don't think it, I think it'll work either way if it's capitalized or not.
Oh, good. Oh, good. Okay, thanks so much for that. And
right.
Now on to the riff.
Okay. Here we go. All right, this is from Kuo, September 17th, 2003. The environment for work upon the self needs to contain safety. To be safe for the self, to the self, from the level of self, is a challenge that will continue until the moment of realization occurs in which you as an entity are able to know beyond question that you are truly part of the Godhead principle, and that as you dig in the perceived dirt and earth of your humanity, that which you toss up is not the best you will see, and that which is hidden is worth the digging. So you may think of yourself as digging for buried treasure. Yet always, when the digging is done and the self is at last satisfied with that work which the mind and the feelings can do, there is the infinitely shorter route to realization of the true nature of the self that is involved in moving into the open heart and sitting within that tabernacle in which the Creator is always waiting, to share silence with that Creator, to share being with that Creator that is the deepest part of you and is therefore never away from you.
Thank you, Monica. I was prompted to choose this because I tuned into the chat room to see what was happening there and to ask the people that were on there if they had any ideas, if there was something they wanted answered. And I didn't find anybody there, but I found the most recent conversation. And in it, one of the entities was concerned because sometimes she or he got the feeling that it was time for her to die. It was time for her to leave this plane and move on. That there was no point in her being here. And I think that's a very, very scary place to be. Although she said that it was okay, all was well, she was hanging in there. I've been there. I've been there a lot in my life. And I'll take you back to the 13-year-old who had a kidney failure. And I heard my mom and dad talking through the door late at night about how they were going to be able to afford to pay the bills. And I was so discouraged. And I was just trying to think, what could I do? And I made up a tray of fiber flowers. I don't know if you've ever heard of that art. It's probably a dying or lost art. But you can get beautiful colors of wood fiber, and you can cut them and turn them in your hand until they create petals. And you can make such realistic flowers that you really can't tell them from the real thing. So they're good for corsages, they're good for arrangements, you know, like in your home you could make an arrangement, a flower arrangement. Instead of buying silk flowers, you could make these wood fiber ones. Okay. I made a tray of these up, and I was walking around to the various stores in the neighborhood, and the first one I came to was a grocery store that I'd often been in with my nickel a week that I got for allowance. Yes. I didn't get a very big allowance. And I said to the grocer, could you put this on your, you know, where you take the money and everything, could you just put this out and display it and split the money with me? Because I have a problem. I'm trying to pay my parents back. And he said no. And then he opened the cash register and he gave me a quarter. And I looked at that quarter, and I thought of that conversation, and I just went home crying my eyes out. I couldn't bear it. Then I was there, and because I was there, I was costing my parents, you know, financial disaster. And I thought, why isn't it time for me to go on? I mean, really? And I thought that it many times since, when my illnesses have become more paramount than my ability to serve. And I see people having to go to great lengths, like they do now. My poor husband bandaging my back twice a day is a big deal. It takes about a half hour. Changing my potty, to be, you know, blunt. This is something that has to be done because I can no longer walk. I can't get to the bathroom. I have to have a potty by my bed. And I can sort of, you know, limp over to it a couple of steps. But all this work, and what am I doing? How am I serving? And it's so easy to think maybe it's time for me just to go on. This isn't the kind of thought that you have when you're trying to commit suicide. It's not that kind of a thought. It's the thought of a person that is valiantly trying to be a good person and that is somehow just seeing that there is a good argument to be made for, you know, my being more trouble than I'm worth, basically. This is a hard thing to address in anybody. And I found myself thinking about talking tonight and thinking about how over my head and out of my depth I am. And how could I help? How could I hope to help anybody? And I noticed that my hands were flat on the bed and sort of pushing into the bed because as if maybe I could help myself think. And then I thought, but wait a minute. And I turned my hands over. I just turned my hands over so the palms were up. And I noticed that the energy around me completely changed. Instead of pushing, I had surrendered. And that's what we need to talk about. There is no shame in surrendering. There is a great deal of wisdom in surrendering. Some things never happen until you let them go. How can you know that you are fine where you are? How can you possibly know that whatever your circumstances are, they're perfect for you? You can never know it from the standpoint of intelligence. You can't prove it to yourself, and sometimes it's impossible to feel it. But you can surrender that part of yourself and turn inward towards that house of prayer, as I call it, that place within yourself that is not only your heart, but is also the greatest mystery that we will ever share. Because we all share the same heart. We all share the same consciousness. And we all have that not only close to us as our breathing, but mysterious to us forever. It takes a lot of bravery to surrender and to enter the heart and to rest and to ask, please, Spirit, fill me with that feeling of rightness that lets me go on and be myself. The reading talked about digging for buried treasure, and it talked about when you dig stuff up, you know, that's not the best stuff you're ever going to get. Until you get to the treasure, you're just digging up the dirt that's around it. And we all have a lot of dirt in our nature. We have a lot of soil that, you know, we've grown from. And when things have hurt us, when things have pained us, we've buried them. We've buried them as deeply as we can so that they don't hurt us on a day-to-day level. The only problem with that approach, as Dr. Phil would say, how does that work for you? Is that in burying it, you give it power, you give it strength, and you hide it from yourself so that you can't work with it. And there it is, buried pain. And every once in a while, somebody steps on that piece of soil under which the buried pain lies, and you react, and you don't know why. And it's a miserable thing to react like that, suddenly to snap at your best friend or your mate, and you don't know why. And the reason is hidden, the reason is buried. And the more of those little nuggets of buried pain that you can bring up into the light again and assimilate and accept and work with until you have them in balance, the freer you are to maintain a higher vibration. It really is all about freedom, not just on the outer plane, the obvious plane where enough, you know, freedom means, you know, enough to eat and a roof over your head and the right to do what you want to do that's legal, you know. There are a lot of places in the world where surprising things are not legal. I was watching a documentary about Paul Simon making Graceland, and in this part of it, he had brought some of the people from the Republic of South Africa over here because it was a big political brouhaha over there that he wasn't supposed to be over there, that nobody was supposed to be communicating with the Republic of South Africa until they eliminated apartheid. And they were walking down the street, and the guy said, "Hey, you know, I've heard about Central Park all my life. You think we could go there?" And Simon said, "Sure." And the guy said, "Well, will we need a permit?" And Simon said, "No, we're free. We are free on that level. But on the inner level, we get caught. We get imprisoned in our own bindings and our own ties. And we need to untie them in order to be free." It says here, "There is an infinitely shorter route to realization of the true nature of the self that is involved in moving into the open heart and sitting within that tabernacle in which the Creator is always waiting to share silence with that Creator, to share being with that Creator. That is the deepest part of you. Let us all try to remember to stop pushing, to turn our hands over and surrender, and go to the open heart, where the Creator is waiting to tabernacle with us in infinite love and rest."
Thank you, Carla. That was very inspiring. Definitely. Okay. Did you have anything to add to that, Jen?
No, I don't think so. Thank you.
Okay. Okay, well, we lost our caller again, so...
Oh, darn.
They called back, and then they disappeared again. So if you want to call back again, we'll try to get you this time. Okay, so I'm going to go on to one of our questions. This is the one I read last week at the end of the show, and then we had the technical difficulties, and none of it got recorded because we lost Carla and Jim. So we're going to redo this question. This is from Yosarian. And Yosarian says, "After involvement with some interesting occult temples and people, a big scary demon seemed to be haunting me. It was scary and it hurt, and I wasn't sure what to do. All of a sudden, I realized it was actually inside of me. Instead of being outside my energy field, it was inside. It didn't feel dark and evil anymore, but instead felt harmless and just another part of me to love. I actually invoked the demon, and I'm wondering if maybe now I'm actually more evil. It's deeply attached to me and I can't escape, so attached that I didn't even identify it as other and evil. perhaps I didn't conquer it at all by trying to see the self in the other, but rather I just allowed it to attach in such a way that I no longer felt it to be distasteful. After that, I joined a Luciferian cult. Am I going to hell? I guess this explains the lack of ascension. I think I'm more evil now because people on this forum are judging me as more evil. I'm more angry, less concerned with love, but I think the love brigade of people are kind of going overboard. They're unbalanced with all the warm and fuzzy love stuff. I was more evil back when I was puffed up with self-righteous spirituality. Now I'm just entertaining the thought that maybe I'm more evil. Before this, I would really love lovey-dovey cults. Luciferians are harsher. They consider light to be something that cleanses and burns at you. It burns away your delusion and evil. Other groups are more focused on being warm and fuzzy. I'm not really disturbed by the situation. I still hold to STO principles, absolutely. The cult is in line with them, and it does help with the anger. I wouldn't say I accepted the STA service because I don't really feel like I accepted any service. It's not like I said to the entity, okay, do whatever. It's more like I said, oh, so you're a part of me. I absolutely don't want some entity to scare me into doing something or coerce me, but in this case, I'm not really sure that it was an other self, because like I said, I saw myself in it. What is the boundary between self and other self? Ra says it's an illusion anyway. Okay, this is from Yosarian.
Well, it sounds like Yosarian is not evil. Yosarian may be somewhat confused about how to pursue the path that he or she wishes to pursue. I think that would be the first thing I would recommend, that there be some investigation into what the real intentions are, because we need to set our intentions firmly in one direction or another. Intentions are really all we have. We aren't wise enough to know precisely what we're doing and the outcome. We just have our hopes, we have our dreams, we have our direction, we have our intentions. So I would recommend some serious meditation and to try to find out what is in the heart. What does this person really want for the life path? We can make this choice at all times. We have the free will and the ability to direct ourselves however we wish. So I would suggest meditating and finding the direction, finding the intention within the self, and then pointing the self that way and continuing to travel it. I think that Yosarian made a real significant realization when he or she realized that this negative entity could be taken within the self and could be accepted and loved there. And when we do something like that and then lighten a darker part of ourself, then we release an energy that's been bound up and can be used for whatever way we wish to use it. The fact that Yosarian joined a Luciferian cult suggests that there was some confusion there as to how to use this energy, because the darker energies are often associated with something that's evil or negative or controlling, where in matter of fact, in personal instances, it's more likely they're a part of the self that we've not accepted. We've not really realized it's there, and when we do realize there's a dark part there, we don't know what to do with it. But if you do as Dionne Fortune did when she saw the wolf at the foot of her bed and accepted it into herself, she discovered she had a great deal more power that was available to her to use in her white magical pursuits. And each of us has that ability to release this power of the darkness that is inside of us. We're 360-degree beings. We've got everything there. We are the creator. In the deepest portion of ourselves, we are the creator. And we can choose how we wish to manifest that creator. So I would recommend meditation. I would recommend increasing the intentions. And then going forth with a happy determination that we are going to follow this path that we've decided and follow it to its fullest.
Yosarian is male, and I think he's asking, like, how does he know the difference between a part of himself that needs to be accepted, like you said, the wolf for strength, versus taking in a negative entity and just allowing the negative entity to wreak havoc in the person's life?
Well, there's a great deal of difference between the experience that Yosarian had and the attack of a demon. There aren't that many demons out there, let's put it that way. Most of excuse me, most of what gets us is from within ourselves. And this, the great realization that he had, it was almost perfect, was that, no, this wasn't outside, this was inside of himself. The only failure there was to determine what kind of shadow this shadow was, determine what information this part of himself brought to him. And in just accepting it, he did not task it. He did not say, will you work for me? Will you be part of my service to others' light side? So he did really well, and I think that I have never investigated Luciferian cults, but there is a wonderful thing about light, and that is light and love are what we're made of. To unbalance the world either way is not wise. So the Luciferians have a point in that if you simply go lovey-dovey, it's sweet and it's beautiful, but it doesn't have strength. You need the strength of the balance that comes from balancing that love with wisdom. You need to be more like Solomon and less like Goody Two-Shoes, so that when something comes up that you need to consider, you have the ability not only to consider it in terms of simple love, but also to consider it in terms of shining light on it, to use every bit of wisdom in you to go to it. And I totally agree with you, Sarian, that either side, when taken to an extreme, is just, that's not it. That's not where you want to be. A service to others person really does need to be balanced, needs to be totally aware of all that is in the shadow side of the self and outside the self. Finally, is there any difference between what's the boundary between self and other self? It depends on your level of awareness. Most people have a very strong boundary between the self and anything that's not of the self. When you begin having experiences that make you question your boundaries, you're only discovering a higher truth, and that is that there aren't any. Not really. We are energy fields. We come up against other energy fields, and we have the capacity to blend with those energy fields so that we become one. And there is no boundary at all between us. Is that a good thing? It's a good thing if both entities, both energy fields, both monads, are set on the same goals. As Jim said, intention is everything. So you need to hold on to your boundaries if you're running up against somebody, some entity, that is not compatible with your intentions. So you need to use your will to set those boundaries. But the knowledge that we all are one is simply the truth. There is no true boundary. Remember, we are entities. And we don't need a boundary. We are part of the Creator and have collected about ourselves a greater line of experiences, and all that we have done and all that we ever will do is contained. We're huge. We're immense selves. And so when we come into these bodies and we come into this earth, the boundary involved is illusion. And it's a necessary illusion so that we can gather more experience. If we really didn't sense any boundaries at all, I don't think we could gather much experience, because we'd simply be awash in the energy fields that are around us and pretty much be experiencing to the exclusion of any other experience. We couldn't do anything with it. We'd be too busy simply experiencing. So no, there's no real boundary there, but yes, you need to maintain the illusion of the boundary in your day-to-day life, except when it's safe for you to relax into another person's energy field. and together work towards the mutual intention.
That was an excellent way of explaining all of that. Thank you, Carla and Jim. As a follow-up question, I know that this was part of a greater conversation on the forum, and Yossarian gave me permission to add a little bit more follow-up to this, basically, and what he said about he's wondering if he's more evil because the people on the forum are telling him he's more evil. And I know that that started with a conversation about the December 21st, you know, he was one of those who he was upset. He expressed some anger that, hey, I followed this guru and this guru told me we were going to go poof and we didn't. And he was upset about it. And people were saying, well, you shouldn't be upset. And then he got more upset. Hey, my anger is valid. So that was part of his question that he's wondering, am I a more evil person because I felt this anger? You know, where does that come in?
We are who we are. And if we intend to be good people, then those intentions override pretty much all of the angers and negative emotions that we feel. If it weren't that way, we'd all be lost because we have far too many instances of dropping out of the open heart right into road rage or an argument with somebody close or a misunderstanding at work. No, he's not any more evil or less evil because he had anger. That is a common experience. That is something to balance. That is something to work through. Now, he probably touched off overblown reactions from other people because they too were upset, but they were trying not to be upset, you know? And it was like, well, I'm not going to be upset, so don't you be upset. And they're right and he's right. There's no, but when you're angry, you're angry. You are who you are. You're never wrong in what you feel. And I'm not saying that you then take that anger and run with it. Nor did Yossarian do that. He simply felt that and had the right to feel it, and he certainly did. Now, the next question is, what did he do with that? At the end of that day that he felt that, did he sit in meditation and attempt to balance it so that he wouldn't have a constricted heart, so that he would have an open path, so that, you know, of energy into the heart, so that he would be able to use the infinite love and light energy of the Creator as it comes through us? Did he manage to help himself that way? That would be good. Service to self or service to others, good and evil, is very difficult to judge from the level that we are. You have to be able to see the vibration of the person. There's an overall vibration for each of us. It's like the big wave, you know, and it's made up of all of our intentions, but especially of any intention that we have had to choose for the incarnation to be of service to others. That makes a huge difference. That changes the vibrations. At every time that you recommit yourself to that intention, you improve your vibration, you improve your positivity, you improve your polarity. It's a question of polarity. We're talking about spiritual work here. If you judge people on the basis of details, you know, oh, he got mad. Well, I'm sorry, that's incorrect. That's not the way to judge people. You have to back away, look at the person as a soul, and try to see how he's vibrating. Right now, Yossarian, I would say that you're vibrating somewhat confusedly. And my suggestion to you would be to make that choice, to prepare yourself and then sit down with everything in you and just aiming at the highest and best that you know and say, this is who I am. I'm a man of honor. I'm a man of dignity, and I'm a man of integrity, and I will choose service to others the rest of my life. Every time it comes up, I will intend to choose that. And just really make that intention known, make that commitment known, make it big. And that is going to help your vibration like nothing else in your life. That is going to set you on the path to service to others in a big way. And when you do that, and then when you make the habit of daily going back to that intention and saying, today I intend to serve the Creator. Today I intend to serve others. You're going to feel from within yourself and not need anybody to tell you what kind of person that you are.
And I guess that advice would hold true for those who may have been bothered by his anger as well, and maybe they're thinking, well, I don't have those anger issues. I'm all pleasant and nice and calm all the time, and I put warm and fuzzy smileys and hearts next to everything I write. And
except
you know,
they judged somebody else instead of...
You
know, when you judge, you're committing karma. You're putting a brake on things. And that person is caught, and so are you. And forgiveness is what stops the wheel of karma and takes that break off and lets everything be free again. So if you're judging somebody, I'm not saying that you're exactly as bad, quote, close quote, as the person who was angry or who did something that was felonious or whatever. But I am saying that it was an unbalanced act that closed the heart. You can't judge from an open heart. You need to forgive. And you need to forgive not in a warm and fuzzy way, but in a balanced way that sees that this soul is on a journey and has made a misstep. You know, it would have been much more helpful at that point to say, hey, why don't you take this opportunity to dig into this anger and find out where it came from? Because... I mean, to be angry at some guru is pretty useless. The gurus are thick on the ground, and they're all going to be saying things that are not true, and I include myself among them, although I will say never once have I ever said anything about 12-21-12, except that it was going to be a change in a shift in vibrations. And I have felt the shift, and I think that there's a lot more information coming in now that we can gather if we're balanced and we have the open heart and we're ready to use it. You know, it's like, let's go, you know. But we can't use it if we're clinging to the old ways, if we're judging.
Okay, thank you. Excellent. Okay, I'm going to move on to the question from Shinar. And I sure hope I'm saying that right. Carla, it was your profound expression of your Christianity on the show a couple of weeks back, which compelled me to respond after listening to it. Could you further elaborate on your decision to remain a Christian in a church that you are aware has many failings with regard to doctrine and true spirituality? And could you further elaborate on how you managed to step beyond those many imperfections to still find the true connection between your field and Christ's? How do you personally manage that struggle between the lusts of the flesh and the things of the spirit? Where there are many, there must first be the one, and though many will result in chaos and confusion, the one still resides at the core. This is the one body which Jesus referred to in his teachings. He was never speaking of a church body of entire proportion. He spoke of the flower of life and the tree of life, both of which he became very familiar with in his wanderings in the Far East. The foundation of your Christianity is securely rooted in your connection to Christ and the many religious imperfections of that vast following which claims his name do not come between you and your connection with him, just as the many misinterpretations of the serpent goddess do not interfere with my connection with and understanding of serpent wisdom. That connection conduit is not in the body of the many who follow such guidance as a whole, but in each and every singular connection between the one and the other. This is the process of being. This is the expanding and collapsing nature of the flower of life. This is the true identity of the one, superseding the delusional identities which the many fragments temporarily adopt. neither God nor fragmented identity. Our true reality is as process, not entity. There is one entity. All else is process of being. Process, not many entities seeking to be God, but God seeking to proceed into mystery, the further unwritten adventures to come. We are not entities. We are a process unfolding. In that process, we, our consciousness, mistakenly adopts the identity of the present condensation of our material form. But regardless of that mistaken adoption, our vibrating field of energy is nothing more than a process of vibration linked to the one vibration from which they all spawn. I would like to hear you speak to the process of the fragmented interaction with the one in that sacred place of connection, even though it may take place in an environment rife with opinionated corruptions and manipulations.
Okay. Well, as far as I can tell, any association that you choose to make with an organization has to be made knowing the frailties of that organization. There is no perfect organization on this planet, as far as I know. I'm very disillusioned, for instance, about being an American, and yet there is no more patriotic or loving American than I am, more devoted to the principles of the Constitution as it is written, and long may it wave. I live in a city that is rife with rotten politics. I love my city. I am in a marriage with a man who is my guru, is absolutely wonderful. I'm sorry, there are things about this guy that are never going to suit me, and so be it. I love him dearly, and so I forgive. And just like he forgives all the many things about me that might, in a more judgmental person, keep him away from me. And when it comes to church, once I realized that the choice that I had was between staying with something that had meant a great deal to me since the cradle and losing that, I chose knowingly to take that imperfect organization on because of what it gives me. It gives me a community of those who perfectly or imperfectly, obviously imperfectly, attempting to worship Christ just as I am. And when I go there on a Sunday, I experience that power that comes from many people tuning themselves to the vibration of Christ. It's a beautiful feeling. No matter the politics that happen on Monday and Tuesday, on Sunday in the service, the orientation is to Christ, and that is what I cling to. Let's see. I want to tell you about singing in the church. I've sung in choir since I was four, and when I am part of a beautiful piece of music that is sacred and is a worshipful thing, and all the people in the choir are focused on singing their part really well and getting everything right and worshiping in this way, my heart just soars. I could never have that experience except in the church. I could never have that experience in a group that sang folk songs. It's the sacredness of the repertoire that moves me, and it moves me more deeply probably than anything that I do in my life, which is why I've done it with such devotion for so long. Let's see. How do I personally manage that struggle between the lust of the flesh and the things of the spirit? I have never found myself to be a lustful person. Except you might say maybe for clothes. You know, I'd like to put something new on every day. Which is very ironic because right now I am in bed and I don't have the strength to put anything on. I'm lucky to get my nightshirt on, man, and not be naked. But I do have a closet full of really pretty things that I'm looking forward to wearing. Anyway, I don't know what to tell you about lust of the flesh. I remember when I was 15, I wanted to see if I was lustful or not because I was thinking about whether to stay a virgin until marriage or you know, have affairs. And it was starting to be that time, you know, even back in the 50s, guys were starting to hit on me with serious intent. So I took on a guy and necked for a while, long enough to find out that my reaction to a man I didn't love, no matter how handsome he was, and he was very handsome, it was nauseous. I was nauseated by the whole thing, blah, 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 blah. And I remember walking home and just shaking that off my hands, you know, yeah, yeah. And I never did date. I didn't date until I met the guy that I intended to marry. Now, he dumped me 9 days before the wedding, but that was not my fault. So about lust, I really can't tell you, because it always made my circuits clogged to even get close to acting like that, and I just couldn't do it. I couldn't betray myself like that. So that's, you know, there's just certain things that I instinctually react against, and lust is one of them. Let's see. About the body, these aren't questions. You're telling me about how you see Jesus. I don't have any problem with the way you see him, although it doesn't match the way I love him. I just love him because of the way he loved, and I want to love like he did. There's a question in here. Oh, yeah, here we go. I would like to hear you speak to the process of the fragmented interaction with the one in that sacred place of connection, even though it may take place in an environment ripe, I think you probably meant rife, with opinionated corruptions and manipulations. Well, I just ignore them. They're not there in the service. I think even the most corrupt priest becomes moved at the beautiful words when he is becoming the magician that is offering unconditional love to everybody in the body and the blood of Christ. And he gets caught up in that and becomes the best he will ever be. And all of that other stuff is just left behind somewhere until after the service. I have never been disappointed in my own reaction, my own response to the body and the blood of Christ. I take the body. This is my body. It was given for you. Do this in remembrance of me. And I just close my eyes and I say, Jesus, I remember. That moment of remembrance is what my whole life revolves around.
Okay. Thank you, Carla. Jim, did you have anything to add to that? I know that was specifically for Carla, but you can add something if you like.
Actually, I was described by one of Carla's priests as a spiritual pagan, so I'm not really a member of the church, and I couldn't really give a rundown on what goes on there.
But,
I take Carla to church, and I cut the grass at the church, so I go to church, but I don't go in the church.
But what are you thinking about this question about the separating, how can one separate the corrupt church from one's desire to be closer to Jesus?
Well, like you said, with everything that we do, we have to look for the best of what's available, because there's imperfections in everything. So you just have to accentuate the positive. If you don't mind me going back to an old musical. you just look for the best in people and keep working on that. And when the negative stuff comes up, then you deal as clearly and cleanly with it as you can, and call it for whatever you see it to be, and try to be harmonious and helpful. And too much more alliteration here, I'm going to drive myself crazy.
How about the lust part? You got anything to add on that?
Lust. Well, I haven't had a problem with lust. I do know lust, and I have experienced lust. I don't give in to lust. So unlike Carla, I think that it's there. As Ra said, it's like the magnet and the iron filing. You don't have to do anything to feel lust. It just happens to be there, but you don't have to act upon it. So I guess that's something that we would look at, any failing that we might have. We just look at them for what those failings are and try to balance them in our own being and do the best we can.
It gives us an opportunity to choose again. That's the thing. And we ought to thank the temptations for that. They give us a chance to stand up for what we believe.
Okay, very good. We're just about out of time. I'm going to give a quicker, easier way for people to get to the page about the raw material for dummies. You can go to bringforth.org. That's bring, the number 4th.org. Click on blogs up at the top, and then click on Carla's blog, the Camelot Journal of LL Research. And on the entry for yesterday, January 10th, if you just scroll down just a little bit, the second paragraph, it says, anyway, Wynn has a note up at Carla, Wynn Law of One Workshop. And you can click on that. It's clickable, and it will take you right to the details. And that is happening tomorrow, January 12th, from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. Pacific. And so anybody that might be listening to this tonight in the archives, check it out. Go to bringforth.org and click on Carla's blog, and you can click on that and get the details. Okay, we have just barely, well, you know what, we're cutting it close here. We have one last question about a children's book.
Okay,
and
I
think we can cover it.
Quickly.
Yeah.
I wrote a book, the very first book that we wrote was intended for the young adult, and it's called The Crucifixion of Esmeralda Sweetwater. And in the most simple way that we know, we knew how, we made a parable of what would happen if absolute good came into this world. And I think it's worth reading if for adults too, but it is at the young adult level. There's a whole variant between coloring book and young adult, I realize, but I haven't had the inspiration to address that.
Okay, and somebody else wrote a book about, I forgot the name, but it was about a year or two ago, and they were on a plane, and it wasn't for children, but it was a way to convey Law of One concepts. You know, I think you reviewed it, Carla. Now I'm not remembering what it was called.
Nor am I. Oh, well.
Okay. All right. Well, if you ever do feel such an inspiration, I think that would be lovely. Or maybe somebody will do it. Write a book, you know, introducing Law of One concepts. But
what would really be great is if somebody made a computer game out of it. I've got a couple of people that have said that they wanted to try to make a computer game out of the Law of One, out of, you know, choosing. So if they ever succeed, then that hole will be filled too.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much. We're out of time. Thanks, everyone, who submitted questions, Carla and Jim. I sure hope you feel better this week. Time for that.
Thank you.
Okay. Okay.
Thank you, everybody. We love you so much.
Indeed.
All right. You've been listening to LL Research's In the Now with Carla L. Record and Jim McCarty. Please check out llresearch.org, which is the archive website. Check out the Law of One material, the channeling transcripts and publications and a lot of goodies. And you can also check out bringforth.org. That's bring, the number 4th.org. And you can go to the Bring Forth 2 section and go to the thread discussion Q&A with Carla L. Record submitting questions. If you'd like to submit any questions for next week, or you can go ahead and just call in live next week. We are here every Friday at 8 o'clock p.m. Eastern, and we will be here next week, 8 o'clock p.m. Just go ahead and check us out. Listen to all the older shows in the archive at blogtalkradio.com/LL Research. Thanks, and y'all have a great week.